the questions of sufficiency, I suspect, will be with us always. I suspect they are so deep within the human psyche, and purposefully so, because just as there is a shadow to some of the great qualities, there's a shadow to all of the great qualities. Kindness, for example, can be highly manipulative. So when we come to forgiveness, please remind me to say, we need to look at our motivation very, very carefully. Are we forgiving ourselves or someone else in order to reinforce that earlier picture of who we are and put it back together even with a bit of a crack? But equally, in what we somewhat doubt ourselves for example, that feeling of insufficiency that pushes us, it also has, in Deborah's life and in my life and in some of the lives of those of you who I know well, and perhaps in some of the lives of you who I've yet to know well, and I'm getting to know better every day, this is also, can be, and often is, a positive stimulus. Can I take my own life as an example again? This vast need in me to not find answers, but to find a path of continuous revelation. That was a huge path to find, because it is the path not only of love, but of continuous revelation. Has meant that what is called work has been far too dominant in my life, and my perfectionism and all those things that come out of it, Deborah, that you would understand. And then disdain, of course, for people who are not so careful, and all those things that I've had to really learn from. But it's also produced. It's also brought forth. However, we need to be really, really careful here, because we can again so overvalue what a particular destiny has brought forth without fully recognizing or bringing into awareness the exquisite beauty of some other callings that are less showy, but upon which we totally and unconditionally depend. One of you here is a palliative care doctor, and I know she won't mind my saying that for many people in a state of great fragility, it is not necessarily the doctors that they remember. I suspect palliative care doctors are the exception to this rule. Sometimes it is the most junior and still innocent nurse. And some of you have been nurses. Yeah? I know some of you have been nurses or are. Sometimes it is just somebody who's volunteering and pushing the trolley and bringing, would you like a magazine? How are you today? And has a moment to listen. The unsung needs praising. Rilke has an incredible poem about that. In all these difficult situations that he imagines, he says, praise, praise, praise. We are very narrow-minded when it comes to praise. May I say that? Let's be aware of that, and let's be extravagant in our noticing in our thanksgiving and our praising. And let's also notice something else. And this has helped me very much in my judgmentalism about the different religions. And I don't regard all the teachings of all the religions with a great deal of affection. I don't. I'm an interfaith minister, and I have been for a very long time. I've been ordained for 10 years, and I've been an interfaith minister much, much longer than that, probably 25 years, I would say. And most of the dogma I could throw overboard, or already did, or whatever. So then it's very tempting to be disdainful of people for whom that dogma is life. Yeah? Very, very tempting. And one of the things that has really helped me in this is to acknowledge deep within my own heart that it is not for us to judge a particular destiny in this lifetime. And how do we know? How does any of us know why someone's destiny is to be rich in experience or impoverished in spirit? Yeah? How do I know that my next lifetime is not to be the most scornful fundamentalist or the most... Please God, no. But how do I know that I have learned enough compassion not to have to live it? How do I know? I don't know, is the answer. I don't know. I don't even know that I will have the chance to learn it in another lifetime, so I better learn all that I can while I'm here. And in fact, I wrote this down last night. Spiritual practice is only what you are doing now. Spiritual practice can only happen in the present moment. For me, that is the primary teaching of mindfulness, of awareness. That we can only bring a spiritual energy, trust, dynamism in the now. Otherwise, it's all good intentions. And, oh, sorry, it's the 3rd of January, and what were my New Year's intentions? So I've written here, and I've written it, you know, really, everything else is memory or projection. Everything else is memory or projection. Now, memory is very vivid in us. Memory lives in all the cells in our being. Memory drives us. Memory drives us. And to counter that, we need to come into the present again and again and again and again. Memory is tremendously seductive. Isn't it? Isn't it the most comfortable cave, even when the memories themselves are not serving us well? And we should not disregard that cave. It's filled with treasures. We can learn everything from it. But we also need to know what it is to be in this present moment and how memory has informed this present moment, how it's shaped, what it has allowed in this present moment. And I've written a third thing here, because a trinity of insights is often quite useful. Being alive is only who you are now. It's a tremendous challenge to be alive, which is why I gave you that meditation that I didn't give it to you. Being alive. This is a very long answer to Deborah's question. So I'm just going to finish with what was given to our human family through the book of Deuteronomy. I call upon heaven and earth to witness this day, that I have put before you blessings and curses, life and death. Choose life. Choose life so that you and your descendants may live. Everyone that our lives touch are our descendants. As we choose life, we give life. We affirm life. We give abundance to life. We let life live. Om Shanti.